Remember these numbers, ladies and gentlemen. Remember these numbers. Are you ready? 3, 4, 8, 9. Otherwise known as Danico, Stevens, Peluso, Broughton from the 95 Devils. Why do I bring up these four digits now? What is the secret code I'm trying to give you? Is it something that will allow you to get unlimited men on Contra? No. It is lottery ball combination number 531. It belongs to the New Jersey Devils, and it will be the combination that makes him officially, unofficially, we have to wait until June, unofficially, Connor McDevil. 3, 4, 8, 9. Mayhaps you'd like to use it for your pick four tomorrow as well, because it will be known as, they will be known as the most famous balls in NHL history. Insert your own joke there. The National Hockey League, in an effort to create transparency, has handed out a PDF of every single lottery ball combination. For those who don't know, the draft lottery is not a situation in which all the balls have tiny little logos on them, because that would be fun. Instead, it is the draft lottery is simply a bunch of balls, all numbered from 1 to 14. 14, is it? Or 16? It doesn't matter. And they pick out different ball combinations. So, for example, 1, 2, 3, 14 is Buffalo, right? That's exciting. In fact, Buffalo takes up the entire first page of combinations. Arizona and Edmonton take up the entire second page of combinations. Edmonton splits over to the other one. There's a bunch of Torontos. The Boston Bruins have 10 different ball combinations through which they could acquire Connor McDavid. Now, keep in mind that the National Hockey League is going to film the selection of the balls. And they're going to do this in an effort to create transparency. Because, as you know, there's absolutely no way to tinker with a lottery ball. If the lottery balls get sucked up in the sucky machine, obviously they all weigh the same. Obviously there's no way to fix this. It's completely on the up and up. Please remember that when either Ed Snyder or Jeremy Jacobs gets the top pick. We're going to have full draft coverage on Puck Daddy tomorrow, including the teams you do or do not want to get the first pick in the draft. Where do you stand on it? That's the question I wanted to ask you today. It's not the official question today. The official question today, obviously, is who's going to coach the Flyers next. We have Steve Wino coming up on today's truncated version of the show. By the way, truncated means shortened, meaning I'm probably out of here in 30, meaning Merrick's not here, but that's okay. The real reason is I'm going to see Stephen Colbert interview George Lucas. And priorities. I love all of you. I love all of you like little babies. I want to snuggle you and put you under a blanket and nuzzle you. But none of you are Stephen Colbert. Well, you might be. I mean, he's a hockey fan. But I can guarantee you none of you are George Lucas. I don't think George Lucas is standing by and being like, but what about Game Show Friday? No, it's not going to happen, George. I'm sorry.
But I created Jar Jar Binks.
I know you created Jar Jar Binks. It's okay.
They didn't bring me back for episodes 7 through 9.
I know.
I was going to have more pod racing.
No one wants to see it. The 9 Impressions of Doom hit again. Yes, my Kermit the Frog is my George Lucas. Kermit the Frog.
Hi-ho, Kermit the Frog.
George Lucas.
I created Jar Jar Binks.
See, it's completely different. You can tell. You can tell they're absolutely completely different impressions.
Hi-ho, George. Welcome to Sesame Street. Oh, it's good to be here, Kermit.
See, it's flawless. Theater of the mind, people. Anyways, so that's happening today. That's why the show is short. But the question I was going to ask you is, you know, do you want Buffalo to get the top pick or not? Like, there's a huge part of me that does, just to see Tim Murray's master plan to come to fruition. Those fans have been through hell. The players have been through hell. It's been a season nobody ever wants to see happen, but it was executed to perfection. And I really like the idea of Connor McDavid in Buffalo. But I also really like the idea of someone off the board getting it. And off the board means not Arizona, due respect to people thinking that's going to be the Genesis device that, you know, populates that arena. And definitely not in Edmonton, the festering black hole of young hockey talent that will be on, you know, strike 10 as far as trying to get a good young player and become a good team. I want to see someone from the rest of the pack get it if it's not Buffalo. Rest of the pack, Toronto should not be part of the rest of the pack, but I'll put them in there because the idea of McDavid going to Toronto is mind-blowing. We all talk about the mental toughness of this kid, but this is like surviving the brain reeducation in Clockwork Orange. That's the level of mental toughness we're talking about for a kid to go to Toronto in that situation. No, I'm talking from Carolina down. Devils, Flyers, CBJ, San Jose, Colorado, Florida, Dallas, Kings, Boston. And there is a perverse side of me that wants to see the Kings or Boston get it. And there is a very, very noble side of me that would like to see Columbus get it, only because they ain't going out like that, if you know what I mean. They played hard all the way through. Joining us now on the line is a man who always plays hard, Stephen Wino, the Canadian Press, a.k.a. American Sleeper Agent infiltrating the Canadian media. How goes Operation Shred the Maple Leaf, sir?
It's going pretty well, obviously. I'm not sure how much I have to do with it, but it's going swimmingly.
It's very good to know. Steve Wino, you are in Anaheim for the Jets-Ducks series. What were your takeaways from Game 1 last night, sir?
Well, it looked like the Jets were playoff ready for the first 39 and a half minutes. They were the aggressors. They were fast. They were hitting everything that moved. And then they got into the same kind of trouble, and the Ducks do what the Ducks do, and you and I have seen it so much with Bruce Boudreau back to his time in Washington. Boudreau coach teams tend to come back no matter what the deficit, and when it was only one, it looked pretty easy for the Ducks to come back, and they made it look easy. The Ducks just looked like a team that had done this before and that just knew what it was doing what they were doing in a game like this, and the Jets for the first 40 minutes looked great, and then they looked like deer in the headlights for the last 20.
But isn't there something also to be said for the fact that, like, you know, the teams that thrive, the stars come to play. Like in the first games of each series, okay, we've seen a situation in Nashville where they get out to a 3-0 lead. Mm-hmm. Jonathan Toews leads the Blackhawks back. We've seen a situation in Anaheim where Corey Perry goes, you know, beast mode in the third period and leads the Ducks back. Then you go to a place like St. Louis, where nobody leads anything, and they lose Game 1 of the Wild. It's so obvious that there is that point of demarcation in this league between teams with star players that step up in key situations and teams with star players that are big names on paper but don't necessarily come to play.
That is very true, and it's not just Corey Perry. It's Ryan Getzlaf, too, in this situation where for the first maybe period and change sitting next to your boy Josh Cooper, we're thinking, well, Ryan Getzlaf's been pretty invisible so far. Okay, so far. And then a couple monster shifts, played great on the power play. Corey Perry scores the two goals, including the one that nobody realized in the arena was in except for Corey Perry and maybe Andrei Pavlich. These guys, they won a cup before, but they're different kind of players than they were even in 2007. Bruce Boudreau said the other day, this is their team. They want to win as their team. And when these guys are on, they can carry the Ducks.
Yeah, and I think that's the big difference in this series. By the way, I don't know. I think I mentioned it on the show. I'll mention it to you. My new thing is I want the Ducks to win Game 3 of their series against the Jets, like 8-1, just because everyone assumes that the Ducks are gonna go up there and get smoked because the crowd's so funny and everybody's gonna have funny songs written about them. I just want to see them go up there and pummel the Jets in Game 3 just to set the series on its ear.
Greg, why do you hate Canada? Why do you hate Canada? Why do you hate hockey? Why do you hate?
You know, it's funny. I was talking to John Delapina from the NHL last night at the Ranger game about this, and I presented that idea to him, and he said, "Why do you hate fun?" And my answer was, "Because I'm from New Jersey, and you know, as a New Jersey, and you know, they teach cynicism in kindergarten," and he didn't find that to be a respectable answer. I think he still feels like maybe I'm trying to create too much rain on the parade.
If Freddie Anderson, the draft lottery, will you be in a better mood for this then?
Oh, no, because Lou will fuck it up. I mean, they'll have McDavid playing a trap for the next 10 years. He'll score 60 points a season, and then he'll go play with his brother on the Ducks and win a cup and a Conn Smythe. I've seen this story before, Wino. Did Freddie Anderson answer some questions for you last night?
Freddie Anderson answered the question that he is the starting goaltender by default, and that when Johnson comes back, Bruce Boudreau isn't going to flip the switch to Gibson immediately. And that's really all that Freddie Anderson has to do right now is, by being the number one goalie right now, there's no other choice for the Ducks. Like, he's the goalie. They're not going to start playing Jason LaBarbera. Even if he plays terribly, Jason LaBarbera's not starting a game until John Gibson's healthy, and he's not really anywhere close to ready at this point. Freddie Anderson played well enough. He did allow some juicy rebounds last night, one of those where if you've got some higher-end talent players on the other end of it, maybe more than like a Chris Thorburn, then the puck goes in the net instead of right into the logo on Anderson's chest. I think he played good enough behind a team that was coming in waves, starting in the second period and then all the way through the third. But it wasn't one of those performances like Scott Darling the other night that is something to write home about.
Yeah, that's a good point. Very good point. Do the Jets have to win the next game in order to win the series, or do you think they can take another home game in Anaheim after they recharge the batteries in Winnipeg?
They need to win the game to keep Game 3 from being a ball of nervous energy. You're already hating on the Game 3 atmosphere, but you get that sense from Jets fans that this is one of those moments they've been waiting for. The first game back, and now this one. And if the Jets are down 0-2 in the series, I don't know that the players are going to necessarily be tight right away, because these guys haven't been here before, with the exception of guys like Frolik, Ladd, and Bufflin, that they're just going to be going home and excited to be going home and playing in that atmosphere. But there will be more of a nervous energy in that building, I think, than if this were a 1-1 series. If it's 1-1, that place is going to be probably louder than we've heard any arena in recent history.
Yeah, the nervous energy thing, though, is an underrated aspect of them playing those games in Winnipeg. I mean, it could backfire. It could be a ball of tension rather than being, you know, a big thing of uplift if you go out. And because we've seen it, and we're going to get to Washington in a second, but we've seen in Washington, Verizon Center be as loud as any arena I've ever been in, except when the worm turns and all of a sudden you find yourself down a goal or facing adversity. That energy can quickly be manifested in tension. It's amazing how it happens, but it happens in every arena.
That's exactly what I was going to say. Was that Game 7 against Pittsburgh that the Capitals played a few years ago, that like within the first couple minutes it went from intense energy to oh no, and then worse, and then the stadium's half empty with 10 minutes left in the game because the Capitals are getting blown out. Or that 5-0 game against the Rangers with Adam Oates a couple of years ago, where it was just over within the first few minutes. And you go from, all right, this is, you want to have Game 7 in your building, to I wish I was anywhere else but here.
Yeah, you got to stoke the fire. You can't allow it to that energy to be processed in a different way. And of course, the X factor in all of this is that you have this team with this undeniable home ice advantage, this undeniable crowd, but they are playing a player in Corey Perry who, much like the fear monster in Green Lantern, is a giant asshole who feeds off of the joy of others and consumes it and then transforms it into evil energy and makes people miserable with his play. So I do think that that's a factor in this series as well. Let's hit on the Caps, though.
The Ducks enjoy that evil role at this point against
them. Oh, they hate it. It's a joy to watch. Let's hit on the Caps. You and I are wily veterans of the Caps beat. I very much relished watching Barry Trotz's first post-game press conference as a playoff coach in Washington, because it is like a Mad Libs of every other coach that has ever coached this team in the postseason. What did you think when you saw 4-1 Islanders in Game 1?
It was Barry Trotz thinking, okay, this is different than what I thought I was getting myself into. That it's very different from Nashville, where he knew all the history. Barry Trotz knew what his team was. He knew the building of the organization. He knew maybe how a playoff series would go. And you can't help him. He hasn't been paying attention to what the Capitals have been like in the playoffs, but stuff just happens to them. They get weird bounces. They get a great goalie who's also played 75 games, but a guy who does let in a bad goal or two. This tends to happen. If Alex Ovechkin catches fire, he knows that he can come back and win this series, but nothing surprised me about Game 1, because this is a unfamiliar territory for a team that's mostly been together, but a coach that didn't know these guys, knowing these guys, at least in this setting.
Yeah. And again, you come back to the one thing he said in that presser that made me mental, because it's something that we both saw for years there. He said, I don't know where all of the short passing went and why these guys all of a sudden just tried to make a home run pass on every single play. And I'm like, yep. Oh, you mean this team tries to get three goals back on every goal? Like that's nothing we've seen at all in the past. This team trying to do too much on their own and eschewing every aspect of team play that put them in the playoffs through the first 82 games.
The only time that hasn't happened in recent history was Dale Hunter. Actually, because
yeah,
they couldn't
right.
pass the puck more than 5 feet without having to block a shot. But that, I mean,
exactly.
It worked for a round and almost a second round, but it was also taking the Capitals out of their comfort zone. And for whatever it's worth, Barry Trotz had them in a very good comfort zone, but all of a sudden the playoff switch flips and these are the Capitals doing what they're used to doing.
Yep. Braden Holtby, by the way, sick, but expected to play tonight. But Philip Grubauer was recalled from Hershey just in case. But, you know, a goalie under the weather in game two of the series is never anything you'd like to see. And maybe a factor in him giving up a snuggle bear soft goal to Brock Nelson in the first period of game one of that series. No, it wasn't the great one. And you know, I went back and forth with the Capitals fan this morning because I made a joke about Holtby. You know, and his play in game one, and they're like, well, you thought he played poorly? Like, he didn't play poorly, but when you're a team that has negative confidence in their abilities to win in the postseason, and you put them down 1-0 within the first 6 minutes of the game on home ice with a shitty goal, you didn't play well. You didn't play well then, because you need to the Capitals' path out of that series and their path to the Cup has as much to do with them believing in themselves as it has to do with anything else. And losing game one on home ice and giving up that goal in the first 6 minutes on home ice is disastrous for them. So yeah, I didn't think he had a good game from that aspect of it.
Right.
All right. You also spent some time in the city of brotherly love, a place we call Philadelphia. Working with some of the finest journalists in all of this country, Tim Panaccio, Frank Saravelli, Sarah Baker. We all know them. We all love them. Sam Carcitti, too. And Randy Miller doesn't count anymore because he works in Jersey, but I wouldn't count him anyway.
All right, now.
That was,
okay.
Steve Wino does not endorse anything I just said. Craig Berube gets fired by the Flyers. He becomes the 18th coach to be fired in Flyers history. Did you think he'd come back for part of next season before getting fired, did you think they were going to turf him in the offseason?
There was no chance he was coming back for next season. Absolutely none. It stunned me that it even took an extra 48 hours for Ron Hextall to announce it, just because even if you say this roster is flawed, and the roster is flawed, that you have to believe that better usage of players will make the team better. And it was a Randy Carlyle criticism as well, that maybe he started Phil Kessel in the defensive zone too many times, and maybe he didn't know what he was doing in terms of how to best use players. It was pretty clear, as smart of a guy as Craig Berube is, maybe as an assistant coach, he didn't know how to use the players on that team. And when you look at the coaches who could be available this summer, way more than last year, way more than potentially next year, and you start thinking Babcock, McClellan, Tippett maybe, Claude Julien, Pete DeBoer, Paul McLean, Dan Bylsma, a guy like Kevin Denis or Kirk Muller. There are so many coaches available that unless you love your guy, you're throwing him over the side this summer.
Kevin Denis is not a bad idea, by the way, there. That's the first time I heard that name. That's actually not a bad idea at all. I think it's going to be a coach that is either leaving a job now or in a job now and will leave. In Todd McClellan's case, I think all of the candidates you mentioned are on the board. I think the first option for all of these teams is going to be Mike Babcock, and then depending on what he does, the rest of the dominoes will fall. Is there anybody from that pack that you think is particularly better than the others as far as how they fit Philly?
Yeah, I think Dave Tippett would be an excellent fit because of what he's been able to do with less talent, kind of what Barry Trotz is now in Washington. And you see what Dave Tippett has done with a team that isn't a cap team and has managed to get the most out of it this year, notwithstanding, that maybe he can be a Barry Trotz-esque kind of changeover to Philadelphia. obviously Babcock's the guy, and tomorrow night we're going to have a better indication where Connor McDavid's going, and certainly that becomes a more attractive fit if the Flyers win the lottery or the Sabres win the lottery or however that goes. Babcock would be number one on my list. I would think a guy like Dave Tippett and Todd McClellan would be 2-3, followed by maybe a Kevin Dineen. I don't know that I see Claude Julien ending up in Philadelphia. Just a gut feeling, and I don't think Dan Bylsma is really a candidate there. As fun as it would be to see him go up against his former team, I'm not sure him and Ron Hextall are kind of see hockey the same way. And this is finally Ron Hextall's hire to make, and he's going to be able to say, this is the coach we need for this kind of team. And between Babcock, Tippett, McClellan, I think he finds one of them.
Would there be any chance that John Stevens would come back to Philly?
No. I very, very, very much doubt it, because he had options last year. He could have been the coach of the Vancouver Canucks last year and took the extra money and the title from the L.A. Kings. Unless he looks at that L.A. team and says things are falling apart, and I don't believe that's the case at all. I believe this was a more of an off year for them than the start of the beginning of the end. Maybe like it is in a place like Boston, that he's the coach in waiting there. He's the guy who's going to replace Darryl Sutter whenever Darryl Sutter gets fired, retires, whatever happens with Darryl there. I think John Stevens is happy on the West Coast and would prefer to wait that job out rather than go try a place he's already coached before and maybe knows the trappings of an organization and the minuses of an organization more than other coaches would.
Interesting. All right. Well, it's all very interesting with the Flyers and obviously with the Leafs and obviously with the Sabres and all of these people. And like you said, Connor McDavid will determine a lot maybe this weekend as far as where we see Mike Babcock go. Final question, Steve Wino. Who do you think wins the draft lottery? Put on your Magic Kreskin predictive hat and tell us who wins the draft lottery.
We all know who's going to win the draft lottery, don't we? It's going to be the Toronto Maple Leafs. It's going to be the Leafs.
Oh,
it's going to be the circus in Toronto more so than ever. New market kid, local kid, going to just drive this franchise back into respectability. Maybe Mike Babcock. That's the only way I can see Mike Babcock going to Toronto. It's the fairy tale story. There are a lot of cool options out there between Arizona, Carolina, Columbus. But I don't see any way ending other than Connor McDavid in a Maple Leafs next year.
Wow. Leafs win the lottery on Saturday night and there's not a makeshift parade by the fans through the streets of Toronto, I will be so sorely disappointed I couldn't even quantify it. I want to see a end-of-the-world level I want to see a celebration of Toronto as if a meteor is about to crash down at the corner of Yonge and Who Gives a Shit Streets. I want to see that level of celebration in Toronto. Oh, thanks, Judge Maddie. Dundas. At the corner of Young and Dundas. The most famous corner in all of the world.
The center of the hockey universe, Greg. Get it right.
The center of the hockey universe, the corner of Young and Dumbass. Steve Wino, thank you so much for joining us. You've educated us all about many things, and we will talk to you soon, sir.
Thank you, sir. Talk to you soon.
Paul Vogel writes in, I believe the next coach of the Fly Guys will be Craig McTavish. He's had success as a coach in the past. He knows his current situation in Edmonton is hopeless. Plus, he's a former Flyer. Okay, I realize this won't happen, but it's more realistic than my hope that they hire Mike Keenan or Eric Lindros. Bradley writes in, and I like this choice. Wouldn't you think Phil Housley would be a great choice? World Junior winner 2013 assistant coach and Hall of Fame D-man are in where the Flyers desperately need help. Currently in Nashville helping Laviolette would be nice poetic justice, too. I think Phil Housley gets a head coaching job in this league this go-around. I don't think all of the big names that are on the market now are necessarily all going to get jobs. I mean, there's only a finite number of chairs and musical chairs. And Housley's a guy who I think is ready. And I think Housley's a guy where maybe some people were sort of surprised he didn't get the Nashville gig, but obviously when Laviolette's available... you go with him, and hopefully you see him win the Jack Adams. I'll be sorely disappointed if Laviolette doesn't win the Jack Adams. I know that Maurice is going to get support, and Hartley's going to get support. you know, there's going to be a number of guys that do. Vigneault, I think, is now all of a sudden a hot candidate in the minds of a lot of people after winning the President's Trophy. But I think Laviolette's done the best job of any coach this year and deserves a Jack Adams. Brendan York writes in, not that it's realistic, but John Tortorella in Philadelphia would be absolutely fantastic. I've seen Torts' name mentioned many times today in this QOD. And I think that it's not as outlandish as you might think, but I also think that it's problematic for several reasons. Well, the one name that Babcock being what it is and McClellan being who he is, and I'm not entirely convinced that McClellan would want to coach in Philly. The one name that I think is really intriguing is Claude Julien. If in fact he's not going to stay in Boston, because that's a guy who is coming from a major media market to another major media market. He has structure, he has system, he has a system and a structure that may allow the Flyers to overcome some of their flaws in the back end. That's not a bad choice at all. And he's a coach that's going to command respect too. Dennis Harkness writes in, Rod Brind'Amour, he has a nose for coaching. And Mark Recchi will be named the team doctor. Speaking of Recchi, and whenever I think of Recchi, obviously I think of Ricci. Could we have Mike Ricci as the San Jose Sharks coach? Is that a thing we could do? That'd be all right? I'd be all right with that. I'd be all right with that just to see the smiles from the bench. Brian Palmer, Dallas Eakins might be an interesting fit. I really think he'll succeed in the second head coaching job. Yeah, I think Eakins obviously went to a thankless situation in Edmonton, and I think he could be a good coach in another situation for sure. Marin writes in, hire Sidney Crosby. The first thing he'll do is bench Claude Giroux forever. A lot of people want Torts. A lot of people want Randy Carlyle. Interesting choice. And a lot of people obviously want Dan Bylsma for the shits and giggles. Probably will not happen. Last night I was at Rangers Penguins, and I saw a Rangers team that I thought dominated the Penguins for most of that game, although the Pens came back a little bit in the third period and maybe outplayed them a little bit in the second. I thought the Rangers didn't look out of control or stressed or strained at all during that game. And the Penguins, though, can hang their heads high a little bit in the sense that they know that if they don't populate the penalty box in the first period, as they did last night, mayhaps Sidney Crosby can play 4 minutes in the first period rather than less than four, which is what he played, because they were that undisciplined. So I think the Penguins leave that game knowing that they maybe had some opportunities but couldn't pull it off. But again, like, I watched that team, and one, I'm just super convinced Malkin's hurt. He was sort of such a non-factor again last night. And two, outside of Brandon Sutter maybe, there's not a single person beyond the top six that makes me think that I need to worry about them at all. And that's you look at what the Rangers have throughout their lineup and the fact that, like, Marty St. Louis can play, like, a third-line role on that team, and you say to yourself, where the hell is the Penguins' depth? Like, how is this team built that it's not doesn't have more quality depth? Big win for Detroit in Game 1, statement game for Peter Mrazek, but as we've said multiple times in this show, he is the goalie that can stop 42, 44 shots on goal and then give up three goals the next game. So Game 2 for me is the bigger test for Peter Mrazek. As a avowed St. Louis Blues Stanley Cup picker and supporter, that second period last night was a damn embarrassment. And you can give all the accolades in the world. We want to give the Minnesota Wild for playing a very good road game. And now I think they won 8 out of 9 on the road to close out the season. And they go and they play another great road game in St. Louis. But they got absolutely schooled possession-wise in the second. They got embarrassingly outshot 14-4 in the second. And once again, we come back to two basic problems with the Blues. An inability to score a big goal when necessary, i.e. after the road team takes a 1-0 lead, and an inability for any of those big-name players to come through in the clutch. Jaden Schwartz did. Steen scored a shorty very late in the game. Donde S., Oshie, and Backes, and Tarasenko, who didn't tally a goal last night. And we covered Winnipeg and Anaheim. Tonight, ladies and gentlemen, Ottawa-Montreal, Mark Stone, game-time decision. If he plays, do we drop the criminal charges against P.K. Subban? It will be okay if we do that. I mean, if he plays through this horrific microfracture, Will we no longer have to call in the National Guard and put P.K. Subban in the Magneto prison in the bottom of the Pentagon for his slash? Will he be off the hook? Just checking. Islanders, Capitals in a game. The Capitals, you know, there's something about this series that I think is just kind of wacky. I could see this being one where Islanders take two in D.C., Capitals take two at Nassau. I don't think it's a must-win either way, to be honest with you. Must-win for Nashville, though, against Chicago, if only to get the nasty, funky, bad taste out of their mouths from losing that game one after the 3-0 lead. And Calgary and Vancouver and, you know, Calgary. It doesn't matter anymore if you're Calgary. You can get down early. You can get down late. You can get down with your bad self. Doesn't matter. They're coming back in every situation. This is becoming team of destiny situation, a territory here for this Calgary team, and it's insane. It's insane, but it's super fun because they're super fun to watch. And they are defying every analytic measure. They're defying every bit of logic. At this point, it's like watching a Michael Bay film. Park your brain at the door and just enjoy yourself because that's exactly what Calgary is at this point. That, of course, for the American viewers, 10 o'clock on CNBC. So please, you know, watch Shark Tank, watch the stock ticker, stick around and catch some exciting NHL hockey on CNBC. That follows the CNBC. I'm sorry, Shark Tank is preempted tonight. Ottawa-Montreal is the early CNBC game. CNBC. This is ESPN to be on, like ESPN2, you know? The CNBC game. I hate to say this because I try to be as nice as I can to our friends at NBC, and I try to be as nice as I can to our friends at the NHL about this cable deal. But for reals, last night I couldn't find the Ducks game. My first stop was Center Ice, and I said, "Oh shit, that's right, it won't be on Center Ice." Then I went to NBC Sports Network, and it wasn't there. Then I went to NHL Network, and it wasn't there. And I'm like, "Oh right, shit, they put games on USA Network." I went there, it wasn't there. And then I had to go through. Okay, then I went to C-SPAN because I forgot it was CNBC, and I'm like, why is there a congressional hearing? Where the hell's the hockey game? And then I went to CNBC after that. So I had that experience that everybody who is a casual fan seems to have when they're trying to find their game. I couldn't find the goddamn hockey game last night on TV, on my TV, as a hockey writer. I couldn't find the game. So take that as you will. And I will be in a hotel on Saturday night, and I guarantee you I ain't gonna find the game there either. So, such is life. But as you know, we're in 2015. Apple Watches, flying cars, and the ability to watch a hockey game on your mobile device. So maybe I should just suck it up and do that, right? Watch the Superman Batman trailer on a mobile device last night. Filmed by a mobile device somewhere in South America. Real quick before I go on that trailer, I know people don't dig it, and I know people are like, it's more grimdark stuff. The long storied history of DC and Marvel is that Marvel is exactly what it is now. Jokey, fun, threats, no problem, jokes, la la la, talking raccoon. That's what it is. DC is that Batman song from the Lego movie. Darkness, no parents. It's that. That's that song. It's DC. So I am completely fine with DC being that in contrast with Marvel, even if that's not what the audience wants. About the way they're going with this movie, if you've not seen the trailer, they are taking the end of Man of Steel that everybody hated because Superman didn't even try to save anybody. Well, guess what? Everybody noticed, apparently. And now they're doing this thing where people are legit scared of Superman. They see him as a false god. They see him as a threat. And now you've got Batman suiting up and being like, I got to take this guy out because he is a threat. And no one can do it except for me. So I'm going to strap on my battle armor and link myself up to the city's electrical grid and fight this guy. And that'll probably happen halfway through the movie. And then they're friends by the end. And then they form the Justice League. The end. But I actually am super excited about, because here's my bar for a Superman movie. Ready? It's going to shock you. Show me some shit I've never seen before. We've had the same origin story basically three times. Okay? And that's why I give Man of Steel credit, because it took us to Krypton. Holy shit, I've never seen Krypton like that before. There's wild beasts that people are flying on. And we get to see the destruction of the planet. Like, I was super excited to see that. And a lot of the other things in Man of Steel, I've never seen before. They were really inventive. A Lois Lane that wasn't simply just a, you know, actually had plot function until the end, when she no longer mattered. But, like, there was a lot of stuff in that movie that I was really excited to see. So, if you're showing me something I've never seen before in Batman v Superman, the legal drama that we're all waiting for, then I'm excited. And I've never seen Superman is a threat and must be eradicated. Like, we've never seen that before. Zack Snyder already gave me Superman punching a giant robot. That's all I wanted to see throughout my entire life. He gave me that in Man of Steel, so I was completely content with that movie. Now you're going to give me something I've never seen before, which is Superman is a... Even when Superman had the bad kryptonite in Superman 3 wasn't a threat to society. When Richard Pryor was like, Superman's bad. Like, they never made him a big threat to society then. Now they're going to do it, even if he's not, and there's only one guy that can stop him, and it's effing Batman. So even if this movie is a giant, festering train wreck of suck, you're going to give me a bad Superman the world's trying to eradicate, you're going to give me Batman as the only guy that can stop him, and you're going to give me Mark Zuckerberg as Lex Luthor. So these are three things I've never seen before, and three things I'm kind of excited to see. And I think it would have gone a lot better if it hadn't been filmed on a cell phone and in the wake of a Star Wars trailer that made me cry when Chewie and Han showed up in the Falcon and he's like, Chewie, we're home. And I'm like, God damn it, why is this movie going to be great? It made me weep adult tears. It made me weep adult tears because the last time we saw Harrison Ford inhabit a beloved character, he half-assed it at Kingdom of the Crystal Skull pace. Remember that line of, you were a teacher? And he's like, part-time. He didn't care. But he cares about Han Solo. You know why? Because he gives more of a shit about Chewbacca than he does Shia LaBeouf. Like we all do. Can you imagine how good Transformers would have been if that was a young Chewbacca? I'll leave you with that thought. Connor McDavid lottery prediction before I go. I predict the Buffalo Sabres win the lottery. We all stand down. Connor McTank. Connor McSaber. And then when Mike Babcock wakes up the next morning, there's a basket on his stoop. It's filled with hot sauce. And wings. And a booklet about the virtues of natural gas. And a lifetime supply of plane tickets between his home, wherever it may be, in the city of Buffalo. Well, why would he receive that? And that basket is cradled in a giant pile of cash. And a note attached to it that says, "Shh-TP." All right, everybody. Enjoy the lottery. Enjoy the games. I am off to watch George Lucas answer the same damn question about why Han doesn't shoot first anymore. Bye.